The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome into the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Vivid Seats. Can't get enough of Chicago sports? Visit Chicago's own Vivid Seats to receive 10% off Blackhawks tickets and all other sports and entertainment. Go to vividseats.com/CSNSHY. Chris Bowden, Tracy Myers outside Bridgestone Arena, which is being closed up for Neil Diamond on Wednesday night. But the Blackhawks getting themselves a day off, as are the Nashville Predators. They'll get back at practice on Wednesday. And as we kind of reflect on what happened on Monday night in Game 3 here in Nashville, Blackhawks given a complete day away from coaches, film, kind of a mental break day for some decompression, and that's probably the best thing at this point for this team.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I know the general principle sometimes people fall back on is, oh, you're losing, you should practice more. This is not a thing that you're going to solve in practice. There is nothing fundamental, anything technical. The Blackhawks just haven't been bringing the compete level that they need to. So, listen, their minds are probably a bit of a scrambled mess right now, especially coming off the game that they did on Monday where they had a 2-0 lead. All of a sudden, next thing you know, they're losing that game. So take a step back. I think Brent Seabrook used the word decompression. You know, they just need to kind of regroup, refocus. They know what they have to do. They just have to do it on Thursday.
And it really has to be a demoralizing loss for them mentally. We talked about the decompression, too, because, you know, the first period was kind of a carryover in general, say for the first 5 or 6 minutes from, unfortunately, what we saw on Saturday night at the United Center. Yeah. Second period starts, they finally get an early goal. That has to be a huge relief off their back. Even more so when Patrick Kane connects on the power play, finally one of the stars is on the board. Then it's buckle down, fasten your seatbelt mode, and they weren't able to close things out before losing it in overtime. And it just has to be a little bit devastating for this team, you know, especially some of the younger players who haven't been through it, but some of the veterans who have won, you know, the seven veterans on this team who have won 2-3 Stanley Cups too.
Well, you know, we have it's a good habit sometimes, it's a bad habit sometimes of looking at history. And you've got guys who have been here, done this before, and the performances have been there, or the stops have been there, or the defense has been there down the stretch. But at the same time, they've played enough against Nashville this year and also just this series to know this team was not going away. This wasn't, you know, the Blackhawks haven't had that dominating, we have a second period lead, we've got this now this year. They kind of were a little skittish on that. So you can only go by history by so much. This is in the now. The Predators are a different team. And they've shown that through the first two plus three games now. And the Blackhawks knew that going into the third period last night. So they should have been more on guard. You had a difference of opinions on what really went wrong. Patrick Kane said that they got back into defensive mode too much. Quenneville said that they didn't have the puck possession. You know, I think it's all the same thing. They just weren't taking the initiative in the third period. And you've got to do that against a Predators team that it's not about the history right now. It's about what the Predators are doing now, and the Blackhawks aren't matching it.
I want to let you weigh in, too, as well, on Joel Quenneville's decision the final week of the season to rest some of the stars.
Yeah.
The team was on a good roll before that final week and a half, but they were in position. They weren't going to move up and down. Obviously, playing a conservative, you don't want to lose one of your stars, so you're resting them. Things may have gotten a little out of sync. Momentum may have been lost. By the same token, it's kind of a misnomer to say that this Nashville team came in on a roll, because although they were kind of locked into at least a wild card berth, it was a positioning game, and they couldn't get out of that eighth spot. Now they've flipped the switch better than the Blackhawks have.
Well, I just think you have to separate them for what they are. First of all, you look at the Nashville Predators. We know what the Blackhawks did down the stretch. And by the way, I think in Anaheim, with a few guys missing, their game wasn't that bad. They actually played a pretty good hockey game, save for LA right up until the last minute of the game, mm-hmm. you know, and the first minute of overtime. So let's throw that to the side. Nashville in their last couple games in the regular season, 1-2-1 in their last four. They were 2-4-1 in their last seven regular season games. Their last regular season game, they lost with 45 seconds left in regulation to a Winnipeg Jets team that was not going to the postseason.
And that was shorthanded, I believe, too.
I believe so, yes. So this was not a team that was by any means playing its best hockey coming into the postseason. Let's stop with that excuse. That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. It comes down to everybody knows what you're supposed to do to win the playoffs, okay? They had a couple days off between regular season and postseason anyway, which they do every year. So let's stop looking at the end of the regular season saying, oh, that's why they're not good now. No. Between rookies, between veterans, I don't care who it is, you know when you're supposed to perform, mm-hmm. and it just hasn't been there for the Blackhawks. And if the Predators were supposed to suffer from the same situation, somebody forgot to give them the memo.
Let's talk about the comparisons to 2011 when this team was knocked out in the first round by Vancouver, fell into a 3-0 hole, came back, stormed back to tie the series at 3 before losing Game 7 in Vancouver in overtime. You were there, courtesy of Alexander Burrows. But we should probably get away from that comparison in terms of crossing your fingers, thinking the same could happen here. It could happen. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But the likelihood of that doesn't seem nearly as great.
Well, you have to look at each case for its own situation. And Quenneville also mentioned some other teams that had done it. When L.A. came back from 3-0 against San Jose, went on to win the Cup. When Philadelphia came back from 3-0, faced the Blackhawks for the Cup. You know, but you have to take 2011 for what it is. Mm-hmm. And I'll be writing about this later, actually. You have to take 2011 for what it is. Yes, that team was decimated by all the offseason moves that they had to go through. They still had a great core, most of which they still have here now. That core had a lot less miles on it than they do now. That was a long 6-7 years ago. That takes its toll on any player mm-hmm. when you've got that going. I would have to look back at some of the box scores to remind myself, but I think there are more things that they could take out of the first three games against Vancouver than they really could against Nashville so far. I think they played one really good period. One period against Nashville in this series. You know, I'd have to look back again on Vancouver.
Yeah, maybe the second of the first game and the second of this last game.
Yeah. But
to be generous.
Not enough. You know, I mean, then they go back in the third and overtime and forget everything that they had done in the second period. So I don't know if you can really draw a correlation there. Like you said, they know they can do it. Anything's possible. It's the playoffs. If the Blackhawks end up putting together a full 60 minutes in Game 4, then all of a sudden, you know, you never know what happens. And the pressure is always on the team that's trying to close out. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. So Nashville's going to be dealing with that. But you have to be careful in really lining up 2011 to now, because there's a lot of differences.
Plus the rat. Dave Bowen isn't around either.
He's, no.
And he drove Vancouver nuts.
And he was a trip, yeah, in a lot of ways.
When we come back, we'll talk about some of the Blackhawks stars who haven't been able to answer the bell in this series and the problem of face-offs. That's when Tracy and I continue on the Blackhawks Talk podcast, presented by Vivid Seats.
It's sports, it's social, it's viral. It's Luke Stuckmeyer and Layla Rahimi, and it's the Next Generation Sports Show. In the Loop, every night at 6:30, 10, and 10:30 on CSN Chicago. And as soon as the show ends, turn to Facebook Live for the after show.
Tracy, one of the frustrations of this series is waiting for the stars to come out. They haven't done nearly as much. And another frustrating aspect is kind of case in point with what we saw with Marian Hossa the last two games.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard to be the best player on the Blackhawks in Game 2 Saturday night at the United Center.
But
I think
was, yeah.
If you had to think of someone who did have himself a decent game, it was Marian Hossa.
Yeah.
And then on Monday night in Game 3, he winds up committing the turnover that eventually turned into the game-winning goal in overtime. It's just kind of a microcosm of how the series has gone for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at, just to break down Kevin Fiala's overtime, he had three great opportunities end it. The Blackhawks should be familiar with him.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Oduya or Jamelson who had a turnover right in front of Crawford. Mm-hmm. That Fiala missed the net on that one. Then he, you know, Crawford makes an unbelievable save. So, yeah, I mean, Marian Hossa had a bad moment. I still think he's been one of the better players. You know, he's still one of the strongest guys on the puck out there. Where everybody else is losing it, he, for the most part, has held on to it. But, you know, you've got a top line that has just not been able to break through against the Predators. The Predators are just bottling them up like crazy. They're frustrating that entire line. They're really frustrating Jonathan Toews. It took, I think, until overtime in Game 3 for Jonathan Toews to get a shot on goal. You know, that's... You need more than that, clearly. I'm stating the obvious here, but, you know, you had Patrick Kane on the second line that had 9 shots. Now, you know, Artemi Panarin's been too quiet. Artem Anisimov has been too quiet, you know, and then his faceoffs are struggling. And, you know, when you're struggling to get puck possession and you can't get the faceoffs, that's... You're already starting off on a rough note, so... There's been a lot of issues here, you know, but the Blackhawks had kind of gotten that four-line rotation February, early March and everything, and now you've got a top line that's gone quiet again. When your third line is your best line,
yeah,
that's great for the third line. You know, they really did set the example in Game 3. That was the hardest-working line. That was probably the most successful line. You know, Dennis Rasmussen scores. They had some very good zone time. They had some very good opportunities. They set to standard, but nobody's come close to equaling that otherwise. And so, yeah, it's been a whole lot of stuff. But, yeah, your top guys need to show up, and they haven't.
And it's kind of interesting because the third line was probably the most significant one for the Blackhawks after Marian Hossu was moved up to the first line, and mm-hmm. Richard Panik then moved down to the third line. It was him, Dennis Rasmussen, Marcus Kruger in the middle, and that was the one that was most effective. Let's talk a little bit more about the Toews frustrations. There is no doubt that the top line, and Peter Laviolette said it early in the series, he has no qualms defensively putting that very offensive first line.
Right.
They can play a 200-foot game. Johansson, Arvidsson, I'm trying to remember the third member of that line now off the top of my head, but you combine that with the top defensive pairing of Subban and Ekholm, mm-hmm. and then that second pairing that's also very good of Ellis and Josi.
Yeah.
You look at those top four, and when you consider the bread and butter guys for the Blackhawks offensively should be on the top two lines and were so effective in February and March, I think that's where the biggest problem lies. In addition to Toews having to deal with some guys in and out of the lineup or on his line, both on the right and left side.
Yeah, it's just... You know, the biggest problem the Blackhawks had last season, last postseason, was inconsistency past that second line. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a heck of a time just trying to, you know, we talk about the four-line rotation all the time, but it is what it is. And you know, if you have it, you're great. If you don't, you're going to have problems. So there have been times in the past where you might see one individual frustrated here or there, and you can offset that, you know, because if there are enough other guys who have things going right for them, you can just kind of move on, and like Brent Seabrook a couple years ago, you know, grab Toews by the head and say, listen, you know, we're okay, we can get through this, you know, you got to stick with us. This is a team-wide frustration right now. I mean, it's more visible with a guy like Toews because him and Subban were going back and forth in Game 3. Subban knocks Toews down. Toews gives him a heck of a whack on the back of the leg. But the frustration is team-wide, and I think that's my biggest concern right now with the Blackhawks is that who's in there reminding him, okay, we can be all right here. You know, just take a deep breath and everything like that. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen the team as a whole be as frustrated as this one.
They don't have answers.
Yeah, they
just don't seem to have answers.
They don't.
And everything that they've done well to get to this point has been taken away and negated and offset. And Nashville's obviously the better team right now.
You know, it's frustrating, and I'm sure it's frustrating. You know, you get that goofy bounce off the glass last night that led to their first goal, to Philip Forsberg's.
And there was even some question on the second goal, too.
Yeah, and you know, I looked up the rule, you know, with a rebound, with a goaltender out of the crease, there's definitely more leeway in what players can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that shot to the head.
This is the playoffs.
He's a little bit more fair game than he is behind the net.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a whole rule that I could go through on here, but I would screw up the technical language. You know, I think it's 69.1 in your rule book, so check it out. You know, the bottom line is this. Stuff happens. Playoffs especially. You know, you get those goofy things all the time. We remember back in, it was 2014, I think, when they're playing Minnesota. And that's how Patrick Kane scores the series-winning goal, is the puck bounced off a stanchion behind the net, goes through Peter Regan and I think it was Suter, right to Patrick Kane. This is goofy stuff. You win by it, you lose by it. But in the Blackhawks' case, you got to get past it. You know, you were a millisecond, a millimeter away from Johnny Oduya's not even shot on goal, counting as their first goal of the postseason. You know, that wonky clearing pass that went off. So you have to take the bitter with the sweet, especially in the playoffs. You have to remember that there are going to be things that go against you. It's not the first time that it's happened to them, too. But when it happens this year, it seems to really be deflating them a heck of a lot more than it has in the past.
Nashville's been the better team. They've also had the horseshoe. But sometimes you are in the horseshoe by being the better team.
Sometimes
as well.
You're in the breaks. Coaches say that all the time.
That's right. And a little bit more on this Nashville team. We'll get to faceoffs in a minute before we wrap things up here. But this Nashville team, very similar to what they were in 2015, but if this is going to be third time the charm for Nashville in the playoffs against the Blackhawks, you know, a couple of players stand out that weren't there 2 years ago and are having a huge impact on this, and that is the two top-line guys in Johansson, who was a number four overall pick for Columbus, who they got and sacrificing Seth Jones, and on the other hand, Arvidsson, who was a fourth rounder, who has just come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
great season for him.
Supan and Weber kind of offset each other. They're a little bit of different players. They bring a little something different to the table, especially in Subban's game. But so they kind of cancel each other out. But those two guys, adding that to what they have in 2015, have really had an impact on their success here.
Well, and you know, when this series first started, and again, you always look back to history. Colin Wilson tore these guys up two seasons ago.
He's not even there.
He's not even there. He had five goals in six games in the series in 2015, and my first thought was, okay, that guy was a burr in their side, so that's one less thing they have to worry about. But no, this is not the same team as it was 2 years ago. And, you know, you've got the guys that you know, Fiala's, the Forsbergs, the James Neals, and then, like you said, you've got a couple new ones. Victor Arvidsson is so quick and so opportunistic. I mean, that goal in game one was just great timing. You know, that net front presence that we talk about, we could do a whole segment on that too. But, you know, that's why I say you have to treat every year differently. And like Joel Quenneville tells us all the time, every team's different, every game's different, every year is different. And so far, the Predators are proving that, and in a way, so are the Blackhawks.
Finally, faceoffs. It was a horrible night on Monday for Artem Anisimov, who still doesn't seem in sync. He's out there playing, but he's not the player that he was throughout the course of the regular season before his injury. Whether he's still trying to get his groove back or there's still something wrong, but 2-15 on the dot. And I think the numbers were 56-44 in game three or 58-42, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And so for a team that wants to stress puck possession and is their bread and butter, you can't have puck possession without winning faceoffs.
Right.
And even the nights that they have had some decent faceoff numbers, it's been the situations which they've lost those faceoffs that have really swung games.
Yeah, you know, you said it. If you're going to be a puck possession team, you need to get the puck, and that's been a real source of contention with the Blackhawks. And, you know, with Anisimov, you know, it was a lower left leg injury. It looked like it was an ankle. I can see that affecting certain parts of his game. I wouldn't think it should affect his faceoffs. But, you know, there are games that you can look at the faceoff situation and say, okay, it didn't factor in that bad, but it's totally looming large with this situation. You know, does it totally reverse the Blackhawks' puck possession if they win a couple of those? Maybe, to a little bit of a degree. I mean, they've still had a tough time just staying in, you know, and sustaining anything. And, again, we go back to the Predators, what they've been doing. Marian Hossa said it a couple after game two. It's one and done a lot of times. And so, you know, I don't know how much it would change things, but it would certainly be more of a help than it's been so far.
And Johansson's definitely held his own throughout the series on the dot against Jonathan Toews. And you know, Blackhawks fans think Taves is money in the bank when it comes to faceoffs, and when he's not able to deliver against a guy on the other side, very rarely, as it's happened before, very rarely, but Ryan Johansson is holding his own in the faceoff circle.
Yeah.
It's been nice doing this out in the fresh air, Tracy.
It has. And we're beating the rain, basically.
Exactly, because it's been stormy on and off here in Nashville.
In a lot of ways.
Yes. Tracy Myers, thanks. We'll see what Thursday night brings.
Sounds good. See you then.
For Tracy Myers, I'm Chris Bowden. A reminder, you can get all of our CSN Chicago podcasts just by logging on to csnchicago.com/podcast. This has been the Blackhawks Talk Podcast, presented by Vivid Seats. Can't get enough of Chicago sports? Visit Chicago's own Vivid Seats to receive 10% off Blackhawks tickets and all other sports, music, and entertainment. Go to vividseats.com/csnshop.